Live from Los Angeles, it's the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, visionary, spiritual theologian, and lecturer, Matthew Fox.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And musical guest, composer, Gerald Conway. I am Mark Legere, and now your host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I am so excited about today's show. I can't even tell you. I'm so looking forward for me and for all of us to our conversation with Matthew Fox. That is going to be a brilliant, enlightening one. And we have some special music coming up with Gerald Conway that was created just for this show. So that's special indeed as well. And two brilliant things happened to me this week that correlate to what to me is a great way to start this particular show. One of them was I was talking to my brother who said to me such and such and such and such. And I said, there's no way that happened. And he said, well, you have to understand that on my end of the telephone game, our cousin told our uncle, who told our other cousin, who then told our mom, and then mom told me, and now I'm telling you. So who knows what the real story is? And I thought, wow, that's brilliant. I've never heard an adult say that on my end of the telephone game, because isn't everything we talk about on our end of the telephone game? I mean, really, when was the last time we had the whole truth and nothing but the truth? I mean, is it even possible? So the second thing that happened that was along the same lines for me, that was this big aha, was I was master of ceremonies for the Enlightenment Music Series musical concert, classical music yesterday, and it's held in a big church. And it's brilliant and it's beautiful and it's wonderful. And I stand up there and my voice sounds wonderful in that church and I just love it. And it was in the middle of the concert, like three or four pieces in, and I start to talk about and announce the next piece. And I say that the next piece is a piece by Joseph Haydn. Now, Franz Joseph Haydn was among the creators of the fundamental genres of classical music, and his influence upon later composers is immense. Over the course of his 106 symphonies, Austrian... And as I say this, some woman in the back of the room yells out at the top of her angry voice, 104! And I thought... I stopped and I thought, you know, the thought crossed my mind, like, I'm not even a comedian and I'm being heckled. How does that happen? I said, excuse me? And she said, 104 symphonies, not 106. And I thought, first of all, is that really that important right now? Second of all, I had checked several sources, and the person who actually sent me the information she wanted me to read had also checked sources. They all said 106, and that's what I was reading. So I said to this woman, well, what happened to the other two? She said, he never wrote them. Well, in at intermission, I can't tell you, at least a dozen people came up to me with their phones independently and said, I just Googled it. Look, you were right. It's 106. Every single person. And then I heard people talking about it. It's like that was all they were talking about is the 104 Haydn symphonies versus 106. And as one person said, you know, isn't it all made up? I mean, like, who really remembers what happened 300 years ago or whenever he was born in 1732. So whenever you do the math. So who knows exactly what happened that many years ago? And so I was thinking, as I'm in that church, if we don't really know what happened, it ended up being 106, but two were never, I don't know. But if we don't really know what happened exactly 300 years ago, do we really know what happened 1,000 years ago or exactly 2,000 years ago? And if this is what so-and-so really said, and this is his law and how we're supposed to live it. So at the end of the telephone game of who wrote what and said what and what that, we're sitting here interpreting it. And I think to myself, really, sometimes my life is miserable because of what somebody else believes at the end of their telephone game, that I should be doing something a certain way. And I just, like I did during the presentation, I threw up the papers in the church, and everybody just laughed. And then we went on. And so today I felt like I'm just going to throw up the papers. Let's have Matthew interpret some of these things, see if he could take us back the telephone game a couple of centuries or further back and help us understand some of these things. You'll understand more of what I'm saying when we come back here on the Life Changes Show with our guest, Matthew Fox.
True performance takes more than just working out. Every day we demand more from our body. But what does your body demand? Hunger is not your body's call for empty calories. It's your body asking for nutrients it's lacking. It's time to reward your body with Boku Superfood, made from the world's finest organic ingredients, vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and essential trace nutrients, all developed naturally and organically from nature's most nutrient-dense foods. Boku Superfood is quite possibly the best thing you can feed your body. So listen to your body. Reward it with pure, raw, beautiful food. Boku Superfood.
You are listening to The Life Changes Show, live from Studio NoHo on the BBS Radio Network. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Marianne Williamson, Gary Anthony Williams, Sharon Stone, and Alex Gray on our archive page at lifechangesshow.com. Or you can visit us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We are back. I am Filippo Voltaggio, sitting here with our co-host, Mark Lejeune. And of course, Mark, you know what the telephone game is. Everybody knows, right?
Well aware of the telephone game.
Okay. All right. We should play that as adults because it would really more.
Don't we? Every day?
It's called life.
Right.
I know, right?
And you know, it's interesting. You were talking about, you know, do we have or will we ever have the whole truth? But I think the answer is yes, because the truth is on both sides of those, right? It's the truth as they see it or as they heard it or from their filter is one thing that came up. But then the other thing that I remembered, and maybe I've told this story before, but it was kind of my moment of starting to wonder if everything was the telephone game, was science class in third grade when I learned exactly what the center of the earth is composed of.
Right.
And then I went home and watched, we have now broken a record that we can drill 500 feet down into the crust. And I thought, well, wait a minute. If you can only drill 500 feet, how do we know exactly what the center of the earth is?
Yes, exactly.
And so, you know, obviously you can extrapolate as to what other stories have carried down and what other truths have been told. I've always wondered.
Exactly.
So Matthew can help answer those questions.
Yes. We have the man with the answers. We're calling the show A Spiritual Perspective on Social Issues with guest internationally acclaimed spiritual theologian, Episcopalian priest, and activist Matthew Fox. Welcome, Matthew, to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
It's good to have you. So
you've been to the center of the earth, right?
Of course.
you can tell us what it's like. Well, of course, you know what we're talking about, and you were agreeing during the break, and you said something interesting. You said, who cares, in reference to whether it was 106 or 104, and a lot of people do. And it's interesting to have you say that, because in a sense, you are very learned, and a scholar. So if you say, who cares, you know, now you're putting it in perspective for us. Sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, meaning matters. And, you know, what's the meaning behind whether it's 106 or 104? Obviously, the guy was very productive and fruitful. And the real question is, of what quality are those 104 or 106?
Right.
And what did they do for our souls, for our spirits, for society? You know, what is a gift that musicians give to the rest of us? And that you were giving yesterday, I mean, when I heard your story, I was most worried about what happened to your singing? It seemed like people were arguing about mathematics instead of about taking in your music.
I was fine.
What disturbed me about it. But it seems like you bounced back pretty rapidly.
I was grateful to have a story for today.
That's it.
Okay. No, well, how perfect, because you talk about artists. As a matter of fact, you just wrote an article that was also featured on the Huffington Post, amongst other things, about Prince, who just passed. Uh-huh. And you said something very interesting about artists and what their gift is. So mm-hmm. so we were talking about Haydn. Now let's bring that all together. What about artists?
Well, from a theological point of view, I wrote a book called Creativity a few years ago. Creativity, where the divine and the human meet. And I think creativity is a mystical experience for a lot of artists of all kinds, because you lose a sense of time and place, and you just get carried along. And in theological terms, that's the spirit carrying you along. Mm. Thomas Aquinas, a great 13th century Italian theologian, who, by the way, was condemned three times by bishops after he died before they made him a saint, which I think is kind of fun to know. He says that the same spirit that hovered over creation at the beginning hovers over the mind of the artist at work. I just love that. It ennobles the vocation of the artist. That, you know, that the artist is entering into the drama of creation itself. And creation is always happening. It's always unfolding. And artists are part of that unfolding and that awakening. So, you know, there's a profound spiritual gift that artists give to all of us. And, of course, my understanding is we're all artists. There's a Native American, David Paladin, who says, he was an artist, a painter, and he said, I'm sick and tired of white people telling me they're not artists. If you can talk, you're an artist. You're translating ideas and passions and feelings and convictions into language, and that's an art form. So shut up and admit you're an artist and start acting like it. You know? Let's not put artists on pedestals. Let's look for the artist in all of us.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned Thomas Aquinas was condemned by the bishops three times before he was then canonized a saint. I should probably let you speak on the fact that you were part of the Catholic Church as a Dominican, right?
I was for 34 years. I was a Dominican.
Right.
In good standing.
Right.
And then...
And then one day...
Well, they had silenced me for a year. The Vatican. And then that was in 1990. And then 4 years later, they kicked me out of the Dominicans. And, of course, they had a list of my so-called heresies. The first was that I was a feminist theologian. I didn't know that was a heresy. I still don't know it was there. The second is I call God Mother. The third is I prefer original blessing to original sin. I wrote a book called Original Blessing. And that kind of undid them in the Vatican. And fourth is I don't condemn homosexuals. And another complaint was that I worked too closely with Native Americans. Now, I have no idea what that means. I mean, I did work with Native Americans. They have a lot to teach us. But that I worked too closely, I don't know what that means, you know. But I think we had a sweat lodge on this Catholic campus where I was teaching my program. And that may have been part of it. But the Pope, this is Ratzinger and John Paul II, they weren't too at home and from learning from indigenous people. But obviously, you know, they're mistaken.
So maybe like Thomas Aquinas, that someday, many, many years, for hundreds of years from now, you could be canonized.
I do not wish that fate whatsoever.
Okay.
Canonization turns you into this object. So, no, I go out of my way to make sure I'm not going to be canonized.
Okay.
But we won't talk about that on the radio program.
So you, but then... In a way, this was a blessing because you...
Well, it was. It was kind of like...
like the original blessing.
Brer Rabbit and the Friar in the you know, the patch of weeds.
Right,
the
tar patch.
That's
whatever.
Yeah. You know, please don't throw me into that tar patch. So, you know, you know, what can I say? Being having your vow of celibacy ripped away from you, even if it's done, you know, very unpleasantly, is not the worst fate for a human being.
I totally didn't think of that.
Well, I did.
Well, you became an Episcopalian is what I was thinking, which you were able to practice.
I did, and I did it because I wanted to work with young people to reinvent forms of worship, ritual. And there were these young Episcopalian Anglicans in Sheffield, England, which is very much a rave center at that time. And they were bringing rave into church liturgy. And I said, no, this is significant. Mm-hmm. Bringing the body back and rap and electronic music and all these new art forms. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, to me, it's a revolution like the stained glass was in the 12th century.
Interesting.
And the church is so asleep, it doesn't realize that the young are coming up with this whole new language for celebrating and going into trance, which is, isn't that what worship's supposed to be about?
You know,
you're supposed to get high in worship. And so
that's what we laud the saints for, that they went into a trance and they...
Well, exactly. But we all should be able to go into trance. Mm. And so I went to the Episcopal bishop in San Francisco and said, here's the deal. I want to become Episcopal priest for one reason only, to work with young people to reinvent forms of worship. And he said, go for it. So we have what we call the Cosmic Mass. We've done in many cities, and we've done over 100 of them now, I think. And it's great because people come alive. And it's not just young people. It's older people, too. Everyone is equally bored, I think, by most of the worship that's happening in the West, because most of it's about finding your place on a page. And, you know, people have a lot more to offer than that. And dancing, using VJs and DJs and the images coming at you that everyone's dancing to, that's just a marvelous way to pray. It takes you much deeper than words.
Well, speaking of words, you threw out some really big words for the reason you were thrown out, so to speak. Feminism, homosexuality, and others. So when we come back, I'd like to talk about those and see what it is that you either believed back then or still believe, and help us with an understanding of either what the problem is or what the new understanding could be. So with that, we will be back with our guest, Matthew Fox, and a little bit later on, music by Gerald Conway, all on the Life Changes Show right after this.
Listen to these words. He would not be beat by forces too fierce for man, woman, or beast. As the going got tougher, his courage increased. It's a little story with a big message, a message that speaks to children of all ages. It's about believing in yourself, overcoming obstacles, and never giving up. It's been called a masterpiece, one of the finest children's books ever written, and a true children's classic. Shadow Stevens has been called Dr. Seuss for the 21st century. His big little book, The Big Galoot, is a story about bullying. Bullying has become an American epidemic, and The Big Galoot talks about it in a way that will touch the heart of a child of 4 and a grandfather of 104. It's the story of a little boy with size 42 hands, the biggest hands anyone has ever seen, and the kids laugh at him. Then the laughter turns mean. They mock him and trip him, and much worse. But throughout it all, Warren Galoot says, I'm a galoot, but I have good luck. You can't get me down. I never give up. A second grader named Chandler said, I thought it was the best funny book I have seen in my life. And we agree. Whoopi Goldberg said, this is a great story. Bravo, Shadow. The Big Galoot is available now as an ebook exclusively on Kindle Fire on Amazon for only $3.98. We strongly urge you to get it for your children, your children's children, or as a gift to yourself. Its message speaks to all of us. Have good luck and never give up. Go to Amazon.com and search for The Big Galoot by Shadow Stevens.
You are listening to The Life Changes Show, live from Studio NoHo on the BBS Radio Network. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as The Green Children, Dan Millman, Hot Rod Fuller, and Mike Marino, on our archive page at LifeChangesNetwork.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We're back. I'm Filippo Voltaggio, and I'm sitting here with Mark Legere and our guest, Matthew Fox, who has written, just a few books. I think, 36 now? Or what are we?
I don't know, 33, something like that.
Oh, excuse me, 106, 104.
There we are again. Deja vu. We won't fight about it. There's no lady in the back room.
They've been translated in how many languages?
Well, like 60 or so.
Like 60, mm-hmm. Okay. And mm-hmm. Just recently in Italian.
The Italians discovered my work about 3 years ago.
Which is also interesting because the Vatican, of course, is seated
is still in Italy,
in the country of Italy, as far as I know, right? So, and the fact that the first book that came out was a bestseller.
Yes, Original Blessing in Italian really, really hit the market there. So that was fun.
Wow, that's great. So we're going to be talking about, so we really quickly, feminism. That's a social issue that comes up, and I have a problem with the word issue, but it's used that way. It comes up a lot. It's coming up in the elections. It's coming up in conversation. And it's important, and tell us your take.
Well, yeah, and it's important theologically, you know, if all our pictures of God are pictures of a male, usually a white male and a very tired old white male, you know, that's saying a lot about us. Meister Eckhart, the great 14th century mystic and ex-Dominican, said that all the names we give to God come from an understanding of ourselves. So if we're only teaching our children that God is this male guy, that's really destructive, not only for girls and women, but for boys and men, too. We're getting a distorted picture because our cultural institutions then carry the weight of patriarchy and not a balance of gender of the feminine and the masculine. A good example would be education. Now, how much room in education is there for intuition, for creativity, and as opposed to math and technology and science, you see? And these don't have to be in opposition, but there should be a balance. And, you know, when there's a budget crunch in our schools, which there always is, out goes the music department, the art department, the theater department, as if these aren't important. But every politician who talks about education, they always talk about science and technology and math. And I have nothing against any of that. We should have it. But we must bring in the more feminine aspects, too, including contemplation. And quiet and resting the mind, and what I call calming the reptilian brain. Contemplation is a very important part of the human consciousness and our brain. Now the scientists are proving it affects the brain to do meditation in a positive way and all that. And so we live in a culture that's very heavily patriarchal. And the result is that we're tired and we're mad at each other. And the reptilian brain is out of control. And there's also what Adrian Rich, the great feminist poet, says is a fatalistic death wish among men. It's a very powerful phrase, a fatalistic death wish. And I think that helps to explain some of the denial around climate change and science that you see in all of these governors in Florida and everything. We deny what me worry. And then in South Miami, there's 6 inches of water on the sidewalk. You know, what is this? What's going on? It's patriarchy, really. And so bringing the balance back at all levels of culture, our institutions, and certainly religion is part of cleaning up, you know, a mess that that patriarchy has created the last 400 years.
What I thought was interesting, you said something to the effect that males have suffered and women, because of your work, are starting to realize that it's not the males that are the problem per se, but they are also
victims of patriarchy.
Right.
Yes. So I wrote a book on the sacred masculine. I call it The Hidden Spirituality of Men.
Right.
10 Metaphors to Awaken the Sacred Masculine. So looking for healthy archetypes, what it means to be a male. Because we men have been given the message, you know, verbal and nonverbal, that being a male means being number one. And, you know, you got to beat someone up in sports or something. That's really about feeding the reptilian brain. And you see it in some of these presidential candidates. I will not mention Cruz or this other guy by name.
I'm glad you
but
won't
mention him. He's gotten too much press already, this other guy. But my point is that men have to find a healthy images of masculinity. So the archetypes I come up with are like Father Sky, the Green Man, which is a defender of Mother Earth, the spiritual warrior, you know, fatherhood, which makes healthy men of a lot of people. A lot of men wake up when they become a father for the first time. The Blue Man is an archetype that's really powerful. It's about creativity. So there are positive lessons out there from ancient times, these archetypes. And we need them now. And women need them as well as men because, you know, men carry in the soul a feminine side as well as a masculine side and vice versa for women. So we're all toxic if we're living in a culture that has misdefined what it means to be a man. And I think we're in, that is such a circumstance at this time.
Speaking of what it means to be a man and technically a woman as well, homosexuality.
Well, I'll tell you a story. I was in South Korea lecturing 2 years ago, and it was like a three-hour thing. It was long, and the place was packed with Buddhist monks and Catholic sisters and the whole gang. And the last question, a 26-year-old guy stood up and said, I am gay, and I don't feel welcome in religion here in South Korea. So I went on with my shtick about how my Bible says God is love, not God is heterosexual love exclusively, and about how all the spiritual directors of the great tribes, in the great chiefs in America, were gay, because the indigenous people recognize that gay people bring spirituality to a community. And I talked about science, of course. I said, this is a Galileo case of our time. Mm. Religion has its head in the sand. Again, we're going to wait 400 years for a pope to get over his homophobia, because science has spoken. 8 to 10% of a given population anywhere is going to be gay or lesbian, so get over it. Plus, we've counted 464 other species that have gay and lesbian populations, so it's not unnatural for a minority, which is gay people, to be gay. Well, I finished. And at that, the whole afternoon was finished. It was the last question. The guy who invited me came rushing up to the lectern and knocked it over. He was so excited. And he said, you've just dropped a bomb. You've just dropped a bomb. And at this time, my translator, who was a very strong woman in her 30s, disappeared. And so he said, South Korea is the most homophobic culture in the world. Hmm. Now, someone had to drop the bomb. It's good you did, because you're an outsider. But the next hour, I had to sign books, and I had no translator, and South Koreans don't know English, so it was a little troublesome. The next day, I'm on the train with my translator. She says, I want to apologize. She said, I'm lesbian. And while I was translating that last question, the top of my head went off, she said. I couldn't believe. I'd never heard a theologian, much less a priest theologian, talk like that.
Wow.
She said, I went to the bathroom and cried for an hour. Now, I just think, I have goosebumps. That is such a powerful story. You know, this question of homophobia is not an abstraction. It's about people's lives. Right. And she cried for an hour. And she was a strong woman with a lot of animus. So that's a tale to remember, I think. You know, this is serious stuff. When a majority, the heterosexual tribe, is putting down a minority, and then, of course, dragging God in and saying, God hates you and all this other nonsense, that the miracle is that all these heterosexual parents are giving birth to all these homosexual kids. Isn't that interesting? How nature wants diversity when it comes to sexuality? And without it, you know, we'd be a much less interesting species. So it's a scandal that the church, even to this day, is just like with Galileo 400 years ago, ignoring science and coming up with all these tales from a religion of 3,000 years ago. And 3,000 years ago, when people lived in tribes, you know, it was important for the tribal survival to make sure you had kids. And you know, not all of them survived. But today, look around. We've got plenty of people on this planet, as we know. Maybe we have too many. And, you know, to continue down the road of heterosexism is absurd. And also, like I said in my response to that man, my very last line was, a culture or a religion that that worships a homophobic God is shooting itself in the foot when it comes to spirituality. Because gay people bring spiritual energy to a community. So if you're shooting them down, putting them in closets, you are depriving yourself of spiritual energy.
Wow. Well, you actually touched on environmentalism and education and the arts and artists, actually, in our talk. But you didn't touch on, that I could tell, work.
Right. Well, I wrote a book called The Reinvention of Work. And here's how I see it. I see that if we're doing good work in the world, we are midwives of grace. Take your work as a journalist here in the media and as a singer and performer and all that. You know, if we're, you know, helping to heal people's souls, maybe you're a therapist, you know, maybe you're a counselor, maybe you do artwork, maybe you're a craftsman, maybe you repair car engines. When, if you're doing good work in the world, you're a midwife of grace. And for me, that's the archetype of the priesthood. Martin Luther talked about the priesthood of all believers. I talk about the priesthood of all workers. If we're doing good work, we're all midwives of grace. So this, to me, democratizes the, and it brings the sense of the sacred back to our work, and also responsibility. You know, is our work good for the planet? Is it good for generations from today? And if it's not, let's shake it up and change it, whether we're talking law or politics or engineering or science or religion. So I think, yeah, we have to reintegrate the vocation, the calling of people's lives. It's important, the work that people choose. You know, we go through a lot and get, we go to school, we go into debt, you know, we struggle, you know, what's my path? And of course, we also shift, you know, 10, 20 years down the road, which is fine too. But my point is, yeah, we should recognize the spiritual leadership that's involved in work. And also, you know, is our work bringing joy to others? And is it bringing joy to ourselves? If it's not, if we can't answer yes to both those questions, it's probably not work. It's a job, which has its place. We're paying our bills. But it's not work. It's not why we're here on this planet.
Wow. Wow. That gives a whole new meaning, Mark. You know how I haven't liked the phrase, question rather, what do you do? Because, well, that gives a whole new meaning. If people could answer along the lines of what Matthew Fox just said, I don't know if anybody's ever said this to you, but you're fascinating.
Thank you.
I've
been called fireworks.
All right. Well,
especially by the Pope, or the previous Pope, I should say.
We have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking more with Matthew Fox. And if you are interested in half of any of the books, and he hasn't even mentioned half of them, is what I was going to say. The books are at MatthewFox.org. MatthewFox.org, and of course they're available also on Amazon, and they're available all over the place.
There's 106 books, right?
104. in any event, and you can find them in any country because it's translated in 95 languages. All right, we'll be right back with more of Matthew Fox right after this, and a little bit after that, the music by Gerald Conway, all on the Life Changes Show.
The Life Changes Show is a premier radio show presented by the Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people, celebrities, corporate giants, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart, integrity, and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your lives through the Life Changes Show, LifeChangesNetwork.com, and through guest appearances on other inspiring shows and events. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching, a private consultation with one of us, corporate or live event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, please email us at info@LifeChangesNetwork.com.
We are back. I'm Filippo Voltaggio, sitting here with Mark Legere and our guest, Matthew Fox, who, if you don't know by now, is international acclaimed spiritual theologian, Episcopalian priest, and activist. We haven't really specifically talked about the activism, but it has certainly come out in the conversation. If you want to see him live in person, he will be performing. He will be speaking. He will be being Matthew Fox and doing his work in Westlake on Wednesday the 4th. That's this coming Wednesday. He's going to be in Tampa, Florida on the 13th and 14th this weekend, and then in Nassau, Bahamas. Is that a vacation or is that a... anyway, the 16th through the 20th. The 20th through the 22nd, he's in Massachusetts. Portland, Oregon. I mean, you need to go to MatthewFox.org. And Matthew is with two T's. Fox is FOX.org. And check out this schedule. Quite a busy man. We're so honored to have him in the studio. He'll also be in Santa Barbara in June and Emeryville in June and Bangor, Pennsylvania.
Oh, yeah.
At the end of June. New York, so North Carolina, you can see him locally. And of course, if you want any of his books, check him out on Amazon or Barnes & Noble and MatthewFox.org. So we have to talk about, speaking of books, your upcoming book, which hasn't been released yet, which I am so happy to be. Thank you for the book. This is exciting. It's called A Way to God, Thomas Merton's Creation Spirituality Journey. Want to talk about that. But before we do, really quickly, personally, I was fascinated by four paths of Christianity and spirituality. The via
positiva,
yes,
is the path of joy and awe and wonder, and that opens up your mystical soul. Awe does that to us. The via negativa is, on the one hand, about silence, quiet and silence, but it's also about suffering and grief and going into that darkness and asking, you know, what does grief have to teach me? You know, not just taking a pill because you feel depressed. That's important to realize the dark night of the soul is real and it has something to teach us. This is what the mystics have always instructed us about. Then the via creativa, we talked about this creativity. Mm. And you see, the creativity is born out of the falling in love with life that the via positiva is about and the emptying and the letting go that the via negativa is about. Mm. And then you're ready to create. You're ready to give birth to something new.
Mm.
But the via transformativa is about justice and compassion because our creativity can go all kinds of ways. We can create, you know, ovens to kill people in more efficiently, as we did in the 1940s, or we can create nuclear submarines and all the rest, or we can create, you know, healthy neighborhoods and healthy schools and healthy living and all the rest. So the via transformativa kind of rounds it out and gives us a full picture. But it doesn't stop there, because the purpose of justice isn't justice. The purpose of justice is to bring everyone back to the via positiva, more people at the table of the delight and the joy of living.
Mm.
So the image I have for this journey is a spiral image that continually unfolds and expands. And I think it really corresponds. I think these are archetypal naming of the spiritual journey, that we're at one of these places, maybe many times a day we go through all of them, but in different times in our life, and we can recognize our friends and partners the same. And so I think it really helps to name this, because each of these journeys is very deep, very profound. You experience a different face of divinity in each of the of the journeys. And you realize that God is not only about light, which is the via positiva, but it's also about darkness. And now we're learning from science that, 95% of the universe is dark matter and dark energy. We don't know what that means, but it is an affirmation of darkness.
Mm.
The darkness matters, and it is full of good things. And in the womb for 9 months, we lived in the dark. We come from the dark.
Mm.
So darkness is very profound. And Eckhart says the depths of the soul are dark.
Mm.
So we have to learn not to be afraid of the dark.
Wow. Yes.
And of course, God is creative. If you're creative, God, Aquinas says God is the artist of artists, which is an appropriate line for good Italian theologian to tell us.
Appropriate indeed. Right? And we certainly know the story or the melodrama of getting stuck in the via negativa, as you would say, right?
Yeah.
But getting stuck in the via positiva isn't good either, right?
That's a good point. You could bliss out and never come back. Although, you know, you'd rather be stuck there than anywhere
suppose.
Else. But no, you're right. Unfortunately, let's put it this way. Life does not spoil us by getting us stuck in the via positiva.
Oh, so right? There's no chance.
There's really
no worries.
Stuck there.
Okay. <Yeah. laughs> I was getting worried.
But, you know, each one, like you say, can be exaggerated. Like, you know, the fourth path, justice and all that. I've had students who told me they were cause junkies, you know. And they, you know, they burned out real fast because they just got on the bandwagon of every good movement that comes along.
Right.
You have to have this inner balance. You have to find some contemplative space in your soul, some solitude, to find the balance between giving and receiving. And you can't just go out and save the world. You've got to also pay attention to your own soul.
Ah, I love that. You know, I didn't give your long list of awards that you have received. I know you've heard them before, and they are on our website at thelifechangesnetwork.com. But I mention it because you won an award, the Mother Teresa Award, right? And so I have said about Mother Teresa, and I've never said it on the air, but you brought it out of me, that at some point she had to be, I called it selfish, that she had to save a piece of bread for herself. She couldn't give it to a starving person, because if she did, then she would have died and many more would have died because she wasn't around at that time to continue to build what she was building.
Of course. And again, Aquinas says this, self-love is very important. You just have to do it right, not wrong. And of course, and Jesus said, you love others as you love yourself. So that really raises the stakes of healthy self-love, doesn't it?
Yes.
So yeah, it's not altruism. You know, I don't like the word altruism because it comes from the Latin word alter, meaning other. And that's looking on people as objects. Real compassion is about interdependence. It's not about, you know, having pity for others. Eckhart says that what happens to another, whether it be a joy or a sorrow, happens to me. That's compassion. That's interdependence. And to, as you say, to serve others, we have to be healthy ourselves. You know, we have to take care of ourselves. And that includes our lifestyle, our habits of eating and exercise and all the and meditation, or finding some tranquility and contemplative dimension to our lives. All that is important. How else can we serve?
So we can coin a new word, intruism.
Intruism. Ooh, interesting. That is interesting. Actually, speaking of coining new words, Mark, you could coin a new phrase, because I heard you say, Matthew, that instead of survival of the fittest, we should be it should be survival of the fit. Could you explain that? I loved that.
Yeah, well, learning to fit in. Our species has to learn to fit in to the web of creation. And we're not here to lord it over other species and to make all their decisions for them, you know. We have to learn to fit in and find our place in the history of the universe and the history of this planet. And it is an amazing place. I mean, yeah, it's taken 13.8 billion years for us to arrive. And it was pretty nice of the Earth to fine-tune the oxygen. The flowers did that for us. For trees to teach us how to stand up and defy gravity with our circulatory system. And thank you, trees. You know, and you know, so many beings have taught us so much, say nothing of the animals who give us food and the plants who feed us. You know, there's so much to be grateful for. But, you know, the planet's not here to serve us. We're here to give back, too. And I think this is what the ecological movement is really about. It has a spiritual dimension to it. And it's not enough. The political and the economic dimensions and all that are very important. But underneath it is a shift in our consciousness that that humans are an experiment and we're not doing very well. In fact, we're destroying a lot of the Earth as we know it and a lot of other species and the whole climate change thing. You know, this is a time for waking up. And this is the real challenge. And I think that's what spirituality really means. It's about waking up. Do we have the chops to change directions as a species? Yeah, we've got all this intellect. We've got all this creativity. But do we have the willingness to let go and do things differently?
Well, tomorrow morning when I literally wake up, I'm going to start reading A Way to God, Thomas Merton's Creation Spirituality Journey by Matthew Fox. It's not available yet, but will be available this week and at all book outlets and, of course, at matthewfox.org. What will I find, Matthew?
You'll find an amazing human being. Thomas Merton was a Catholic monk. He died in 1968. He may have been murdered, frankly, by our government. I go into that issue because he came out against the Vietnam War before any other religious leader.
You knew him well.
Well, he's the one who sent me, actually, to study in Paris. He told me that was the best place to get a doctorate degree in spirituality. So all the trouble I've gotten in since is due to Thomas Merton.
I hope you it's a tell-all book, then.
It's a tell-all book. But Merton is amazing, and he was a mentor to Father Daniel Berrigan, who died yesterday, who was an activist, went to jail and everything in the late 60s, opposing the Vietnam War, a very brave and poet. He was a poet and a Jesuit priest. So Merton's influence has been immense, far beyond the Catholic Church. And, you know, he was close to Rabbi Heschel. He had a correspondence with Pasternak and he musicians of all kinds, scientists. He was just an amazing mind and a poet, a real poet, and an artist in his writings. So you love his poetry and his writings that are in that book. I love them.
And that's in the book as well.
Oh, yeah, he's in there. In his own words.
there are some words that he wrote to you in the book as well, right?
Yes, yeah. The inside flap there talks about the title of the book, A Way to God. That's his language. He wrote me in his letter saying go to Paris. He said, and this had been 1967, he said, you know, the culture is very interested in mysticism, what with LSD and all that, he said. But it's peculiar that people in the church aren't even talking about it. So after all, he said, people aren't just looking to us for practical issues. They're looking for the way to God, he said. So that's why I call the book A Way to God.
The book is A Way to God. Thomas Merton's Creation Spirituality Journey. It comes out this week. Go to MatthewFox.org and get yourself a copy if you're interested, or one of the other 106 books. You mentioned LSD, and so in closing, I have to say that you know it's interesting that when I thought about you and read your work and knew that you were around in the 60s, I thought, oh, he must have been around, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's interesting that you talk about you can get high without drugs.
Absolutely. Let me tell you a story about our cosmic mass. One day, a therapist who works with teenagers who are on drugs brought a dozen of them to the mass in a big van. And afterwards, she said, on the way home, they said to her, this is the first time in our life we've gotten high without drugs.
Wow.
So the purpose of ritual is to
get
us
mass?
High. At a mass, yes, because you dance. We dance at our mass. You don't sit around reading prayers out of a book at each other. And yes, that's the whole point. Ritual, well, if you've been to a Sundance or a Vision Quest or a Sweat Lodge, you get high there. All healthy ritual gets you high. And that's what's wrong with ritual. That's why it's so dead. People don't get high. And so kids think they have to go out and take drugs or something.
So to get high, go to MatthewFox.org and find out where the next mass is. With that, this has been a distinct pleasure. Thank you so much for being here with us.
It's been my pleasure, too. Thank you.
Please stick around. We have some beautiful music from Gerald Conway that's been created for this show, specifically right after this on the Life Changes Show when we come back.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
You are listening to the Life Changes Show live from Studio NoHo on the BBS Radio Network. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Mariel Hemingway, Shadow Stevens, Gary Zukav, and Kyle Cease on our website at lifechangesshow.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and at Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
And already I have bells ringing in my ear. Is that you, Gerald?
That is I.
Gerald Conway is in the studio. He is a musician, composer. Actually, you've done a lot. You know, it's interesting how we attribute, oh, if he's signed to a record label, which you have been for many years, oh, he must be. So you are all that and more. You've been signed to record label after record label. And here you are. Welcome, first of all.
Thank you.
Gerald Conway, thank you for being here. Yeah, so what was that experience like, being signed and the bands you were working with the music and all that.
The music industry is a trip. I'll tell you right off the bat. You know, you get signed for who you are, and then they change you. And they also tend to try to divide you to get what they want. So, you know, at a young age, I learned how that system worked. And, you know, I had my own ideas. So
During that time, if you were listening to the show, you were in the via negativa, I have a feeling, instead of the creativa part, which you started out and then you signed into the via negativa.
Exactly.
Anyway, but now you are here with us with something very positiva, or maybe even transformativa.
Absolutely.
Which you created for the show.
I did a piece last night. I had, when I was asked to do this, I said, yeah, sure, no problem. I have material and stuff. But this is an experiment. I do electronics. I make electronics very spiritual,
yeah.
You know, and take you on a journey within yourself and outside of yourself.
Yeah, that's why we wanted you on the show. But then you decided to do something different.
and now I'm merging the analog, the natural sounds with the electronic sounds. Mm. And I'm finding out that it's a challenge.
It is.
Yeah, so the pieces I was going to work with today didn't work.
Oh.
So 9:30 last night, I found myself going, oh, I have to make something from scratch.
It's challenge-a-tiva.
Challenge-a-tiva. Well, I love the fact that you didn't say, oh, I'm just going to go use one of my old things. That you still were on that creativity path and said, there's something special I hope it's special.
Absolutely.
That's going to come out.
Well, I meditated on it, and I just quieted myself because I was a little nervous, I have to admit, you know. And then I just let it flow, and I recorded it and put it together, and this is what it'll be.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you say you recorded it. There's a part that's recorded, and
right.
Then in the studio here you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 bowls.
Correct.
Are those ceramic? What are those?
They're actually metal.
They're metal. Okay. So you have 7 metal bowls of different sizes that you're going to be playing.
Correct.
Okay. And tell us about...
Okay. It's interesting. With these bowls, I went to the Gem Show in Tucson and found a distributor of these bowls. And I spent the whole day with my phone out in the tuner. And I was testing all the sounds out, you know, finding exactly the bowls I wanted to purchase.
Wow.
So I ended up purchasing approximately 24 bowls.
Wow.
So I brought 6.
Okay. Wow. All right. And you're going to be playing all 6 plus those chimes.
Correct.
So here in the studio, we have Gerald Conway is going to be playing 106 bowls. Did you give a name to this piece?
Yes, Just Outside of My Vision.
Ooh, okay. Why don't we leave it at that then? Here's Gerald Conway performing brand new piece, Just Outside of My Vision, live in Studio NoHo on the Life Changes Show. Wow. I didn't want to break the silence. I mean, that was so special.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow, that's an experiment, you say, huh?
Yeah.
I beg to differ. Or I should say, you succeeded.
Thank you.
It was at the same time relaxing and calming and exciting to watch you do this. I've heard the bowls played with music. I've heard the bowls and bowls with music, but in your case, the bowls were tuned. And so they were the music that you wrote for the bowl. I mean, that was just like,
yeah, that was brilliant. Ah. Thank you.
That is awesome. If people are, if you want to know more about this man, cosmicwebsite.com,
correct,
right?
Correct.
Gerald Conway is his name, and music with bowls is his new game.
Yeah, exactly. It's all about frequencies. You know, I'm a sound therapist and music therapist.
You're a lot more than that, Reiki master and integrative energy therapist. I mean, what else? I mean, you incorporate all this into everything you do.
All this comes into play as far as this goes. I'm looking to do a mass media event with this, really, with screens and sound, all the senses. When when you were talking about the senses, at your talk.
Oh, Saturday.
Yes.
At the Yes Salon. Right?
Yes, exactly. Uh-huh. I was thinking
on the
of
little
that.
Dog that could, available at Amazon.com.
That's right. It's beautiful. And I want to do an event, several events, with the screens and sound and smell and the frequencies, because it's all about it. And it's also at 7:32. You know, the frequency.
Wow. Well, you know what? Actually, I know someone, I should introduce you to. There's somebody that does something called a cosmic mass. And I could just see something like that with screens and smells and bowls at a cosmic mass. His name is Matthew Fox, by the way.
That's true. Very cool. Yeah.
So you two might need to meet.
Well, everybody in the studio just got high, so.
Yes, that's right.
There you go.
Wow. Well, this has been very special. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for
bringing this energy, creating something new for yourself, for us, for the audience, and for the world.
Thank you. And if I can say, I have a new CD coming out. It's called The Awakening, you know, tying into what you were speaking about. And its subtitle is Gaia Sleeps No More.
Well, Gaia has never been sleeping. It's us that's been sleeping, but we get that.
Awake at the same time.
We're awake at the same time. I love it. And so is that available at Conscious Cosmic Website.com?
That will be coming out in the next 2 months.
Okay.
You know, and look for it. And of course, the Cosmic Web, which is talking about dark matter, you know, also is available on iTunes and at Cosmic Website.
Cosmicwebsite.com. Of course, people can follow you on Facebook. We have a link for that on our website as well. Or they could find you at, is it Light Music? Or Z Light Music.
Exactly.
All right. Yeah.
And
well,
we have a fair coming up in June in La Crescenta. You know, you can at the Center of Spiritual Living. Check that out.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. And again, all of that's available at cosmicwebsite.com.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. Gerald Conway, thank you so much for all of that beautiful music and your bowls and creating a new piece. And again, thank you to Matthew Fox, our guest. What a pleasure it has been. And hopefully we'll be again soon. In the meantime, I'd like to start off by thanking Brent Hahn, who is the engineer here at Studio NoHo, for even making the bowls record good.
So, it was wonderful.
So thank you, Brent Hahn, here at Studio NoHo. And also thank you to our program manager, Doug Newsom, at BBS Radio. We know you're not feeling well, so hopefully you feel better soon. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Donahue, and our producer, Mark Legere, I am Filippo Voltaggio, your host, saying, when your life changes, as ours just did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.